This is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. It was 11 days before there were any clues at all. There had been witness reports of hearing an aircraft engine labouring in that unexpected blizzard, but the weather had sent most people scurrying indoors. That snowstorm was so heavy, even those outside could barely see a thing. It was on April the 2nd, 1937, that a fisherman picked up a long, thin piece of green-painted wood on the beach at Great Yarmouth. Over the next couple of days, similar items washed up at Galston, Lowestoft, and as far away as Southwold. A piece of aircraft propeller about 18 inches long was found at Winterton, and an aircraft wheel, half buried in the sand, turned up at Sheringham. All the pieces were confirmed as coming from a de Havilland Moth biplane. A mystery that had gripped the nation for a week and a half appeared, finally, to have been solved, even if the outcome was the one everyone had feared. Mary Russell, the Duchess of Bedford, came to flying late in life. She was 60 years old when she took her first flight in June 1926, and was so thrilled by the experience she immediately set about learning to fly herself. Within 4 years, she'd flown with a co-pilot to India and to Cape Town. In the mid-1930s, she made flights to the Western Sahara and to northern Nigeria. She needed hardly any excuse to climb into the cockpit, even for a short flight. And on the afternoon of the 22nd of March 1937, hearing that a recent stint of bad weather had caused flooding in the Fens, she decided to take a look for herself. She donned her leathers, drove round to the hangar at her personal airfield, where she kept her de Havilland Moth, and rolled open the doors. It was a freezing cold day, and the sky was the colour of mercury, but there wasn't much wind. She'd seen nothing to concern her in the weather forecast, and it was only a quick flight, no more than an hour. She'd just go up, check on the flooding, home in time for dinner. The Duchess could turn her hand to anything, it seemed. In the early 1900s, she became one of the first Western women to take up jiu-jitsu. Becoming so proficient, she appeared in the instructional photographs for the first ever book on the subject in English, The Fine Art of Jiu-Jitsu, published in 1905. Having harboured an ambition since childhood to be a nurse, she studied at the London Hospital, then built a hospital in the grounds of her home at Woburn, the first of four hospitals she'd provide for the area. When the Woburn establishment was commandeered by the military during the First World War, she qualified as a surgeon's assistant, enabling her to assist in the operating theatre. After the war, she even became a qualified radiologist. She was also a brilliant ornithologist, becoming in 1905 the first woman to be elected to the Linnaean Society, and following that 4 years later with election to the British Ornithologists' Union. In the years before the First World War, she would sail her yacht, the Sapphire, to the waters of the far north on birdwatching expeditions to the Faroe Islands and up above the Arctic Circle to Jan Mayen and Svalbard. She built herself tiny, simple cottages on Barra in the Western Isles, as well as Fair Isle and Shetland, and it was on Fair Isle in 1911 that she collected the first British specimen of a Blythe's reed warbler. She climbed into the cockpit of the Moth, went through her checks, then eased the aircraft out through the hangar doors. She could feel the power of the engine coursing through her. Even a routine flight like this one gave her butterflies of excitement. She manoeuvred the plane to the end of the field, pulled her goggles down over her eyes, and looked ahead. This was her favourite part. The ground ahead, the sky above, the power of the machine she controlled. She was 71 years old and almost completely deaf, but this moment always made her young again. A quick glance at the windsock hanging limply at the edge of the field, and she set the aircraft rolling forward over the grass. She'd neither expected nor intended to be the Duchess of Bedford. Born in 1865, as the daughter of an archdeacon from Hampshire, Mary Tribe didn't intend or expect much, to be honest. And after completing her education at Cheltenham and in Zurich, she sailed for Lahore to join the parents she hadn't seen in almost a decade. While in India, she met and married Herbrand Russell, a son of the 9th Duke of Bedford. But when Herbrand's brother died without an heir in 1893 at the age of just 40, 2 years after succeeding their father, suddenly Herbrand found himself Duke and Mary Duchess. Married life didn't turn out as Mary expected. Yes, she had the privileges that go with being elevated to the nobility, but Herbrand was a suffocatingly old-fashioned husband, even for the times. When their son Hastings was born, Mary was told he would be brought up by nurses and sent away to boarding school at the earliest opportunity. Nor was she allowed any role in the running of their home. And in the early days, if she wanted to go anywhere, she had to obtain a letter of permission from her husband to give to the chauffeur. No wonder she found the freedom of the air so liberating, free as she was from the stifling bonds on the ground. The moth bumped over the field, picking up speed until that glorious moment when the bumping stops and the aircraft eases away from the ground. The tops of the trees passed beneath as she immersed herself in that deep sense of calm that always washed over her at this moment. She checked her compass and banked into a turn northeast that took her in the direction of the Fens. She loved flying solo most of all, and now she had almost 200 hours of solo flight to her name. Her biggest adventures had come with a man doing most of the flying, Charles Barnard, with whom she flew in 1929 to Karachi and back, along with a mechanic called Bob Little. The following spring, they flew to Cape Town and back in just 21 days, her feats making her famous as the Flying Duchess, and even bringing the newsreel cameras to her landing after the South African trip, as she thanked Barnard and Little.
Thank you very much indeed for all you've done for me.
Cape Town was a much warmer flight than this one, she thought, as a vast silver lake covering a large part of the Fens came into view ahead. The sky was getting darker and the temperature was dropping sharply, she noticed. And as she pulled her leather flying coat tighter around her, the first snowflake alighted on her goggles. Exciting, she thought. I don't think I've ever flown solo in the snow before. She could just make out the shoreline ahead. She'd fly as far as the coast, then follow the edge of the flood around and make her way back, she decided. That snow is getting heavier. I best not stay up here too long.
Royal Air Force planes and squads of police took part in a search extending over 8 counties for the 71-year-old Duchess of Bedford. The Duchess, who has flown to Cape Town and made a record flight to India, took off solo from her home, Woburn Abbey, near Bedford, with the intention of flying over the flooded areas of Cambridgeshire. She needed less than 1 hour to complete her 200 hours solo flying, but after taking off, she disappeared.
That was a coastal story. I'm Charlie Connolly. Some of you may know already that pioneering women aviators is a subject that really fascinates me, and you can read more about some of them in my book, The Channel, not long out in paperback from Weidenfeld and Nicholson, priced $9.99. Coastal Stories is researched, written, produced, and, bless my soul, presented by me, Charlie Connolly, and listened to by you, the people listening. See you next time.